Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Smithfield Foods is the largest pig slaughterhouse and pork processor in the world. They operate in 25 states and 5 countries around the globe. In 2013, the Hong Kong-based WH Group bought Smithfield for $4.7 billion. Reuters reports that the company's 2021 revenue grew almost 7% to $27 billion. One factory slaughters 10,000 pigs a day. Over the last 3 decades, North Carolina has gone from 2 million pigs to upward of 9 to 10 million pigs. They produce over 10 billion gallons of waste every year. Eastern North Carolina has 4,000 lagoons of pig feces, urine, and blood. That waste has been sprayed on nearby residents since the early 90s. It is also sprayed onto nearby fields, contaminating the air and drinking water. These residents are low income and mostly Black. Some of these families have lived in these homes for generations. Those who live near hog farms have higher death rates than those who live further away, according to Duke University School of Medicine. The new documentary, The Smell of Money, follows residents and activists as they fight for the freedom to enjoy fresh air, clean water, and a life without the stench of manure. Here is the trailer.
They are poisoning our soil, poisoning our groundwater, poisoning people, fellow Americans. They are stealing from them in the present and stealing from future generations.
If it does not touch you in an emotional way, if you really get in to look at this issue, whether it's from an environmental standpoint, an animal rights issue, whether it's a human rights issue, whether it's an antibiotic use issue, if you can walk away from this saying, no big deal, you need to come talk to me. Let me take you for 3 days and let you sit down and talk to these people who have to live with this every day. Matter of fact, let me let you live in their shoes for a day and see if it doesn't change your mind.
No, and ain't nobody helping us do nothing. They don't care because we Black. We back up in the country. I just hope my house don't get burned up tonight from Taco the Year. I'm sure he's somewhere peeping now. You can believe that. He got his boys on you.
What make you think you have a right to set up a hog farm and destroy my way of life? People don't have access to clean air and clean water anymore.
One of the most disturbing stories that I've heard is the sensation of being sprayed with shit, basically.
I have seen this stream filled with feces and urine from this hog operation right up here more than one time.
Almost every fish in the river died. Over a billion fish died in a period of about a week and a half.
Everyone else on this road got to help the faith. Every one of us, trust me.
Our health is at stake here. To raise animals in this way puts all of us at risk.
It is time that the village stand up, step up, and speak up.
If these people had lived in McMansions, it would have been a different story.
It's the power to control. That's what drives man to the end of sanity.
All the laws protect these industries. No one is protecting us.
That is a trailer for the new documentary, The Smell of Money. And if you are in the Bay Area, you can see the film this Saturday at 5 p.m. at the Mindful Eating Film and Food Festival in San Rafael. And we will add a link at yourcallradio.org. Joining us to discuss The Smell of Money are two guests. Jamie Berger is a writer and documentary filmmaker from North Carolina. Jamie is the writer and producer of The Smell of Money. She uses writing and visual storytelling to draw attention to issues ranging from environmental racism to the climate crisis. Hi, Jamie. Thank you so much for making this important film. Huge thanks to you and your team, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it. I'm excited to talk about the film.
We are also joined by Naima Mohammed, an organizing co-director with the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network, an organization that promotes health and environmental quality in North Carolina. Naima has worked tirelessly as a community organizer with the network since 2001 to hold the pork industry accountable for its pollution and what it really does to the lives of Black people living in rural North Carolina counties. Hi, Naima. Thank you so much for joining us again. Well, Jamie, I want to start.
Hi, thank you all for having me. I am honored to be here, especially with Jamie. But I have one correction to make. I am no longer the a co-director or of organizing. I am, as of January, senior advisor.
Senior advisor.
We have another person that's going to be serving as the community organizer.
All right. Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you for that, Naima. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank y'all for having me.
Naima, I'm just wondering, you know, we had you on, gosh, I believe it was last year, to remember Elsie Herring. And that was just a very powerful show. We got a lot of listener reaction to that show. Mm-hmm. How have things been going for all of you in North Carolina since Elsie Herring's passing? And you changing roles with the Environmental Justice Network and just the fight for justice. How are you all doing?
Yeah. Well, we're hanging in there. And even though I've changed roles, I am not out of touch with everybody. And so we will still, as an organization, we will still be doing the work that we've been doing over the last nearly three decades of working with communities that's living with these environmental hazards, and particularly these concentrated animal feeding operations. But we're hanging in there. Elsie is sorely missed, and we are still, you know, trying to fill that gap. But that's a big gap to fill, because she was just wonderful and a real advocate and someone that we could always call on. And she would always show up and show out. And so she is sorely missed.
Elsie Herring is prominently featured in the documentary. And Jamie, I just wonder, you and your team, how did you get interested in this issue? When did you first learn about the incredible work that Elsie, Naima, and all of the others have done and are doing to hold Smithfield accountable?
Thanks for that question. I, as you mentioned, I grew up in North Carolina, but not in Eastern North Carolina. I grew up in a suburb of Raleigh in the more central part of the state. So to me, when I heard about, you know, the pork industry, all I heard was, you know, about North Carolina's kind of unofficial, or maybe it's even official, state food, which is barbecue. And that was sort of my exposure to it as a child growing up. Fast forward till when I got into college, I became interested in the environment and started studying issues, you know, local to me in North Carolina. And this one really rose to the top. And it was at that point that I started hearing about Elsie's story and Naima and her work and the work of the Waterkeeper Alliance, which is another organization we worked with closely on our film. But I really only got to explore that, you know, from an academic perspective. And then years later, I was doing video work for a nonprofit, and a colleague of mine who is now the director of this film approached me. We were working together at the time, and he said, you know, I think we should make a feature. Do you have any ideas? And this one really rose to the top for me because it's just such a compelling issue. It's such a story that is close to my heart. As a native North Carolinian, I had already made a lot of the contacts. So that's how we got started, and meeting up with Elsie in person was one of our first stops as soon as we started filming. And, you know, we really just fell in love with her, and we're of course totally devastated and torn apart when she passed, but are grateful that we've had the chance to capture her story and hopefully have her message and her resilience sort of live on through the film.
I also appreciated that you spent some time on Elsie's family history. As she says in the film, her grandfather was born and raised on that land where she stood. Her grandfather was a slave. He purchased the land in 1891, and then he purchased three more tracts about 6 years later. Elsie's father then built that house in 1921. Her mom had 15 kids in that house. And then, as she said, the pigs came in 1986. It's just a really incredible story, Jamie. Can you tell us more about the story? And then also, what you learned from Dr. Steve Wynn, again, the late Dr. Steve Wynn with the UNC School of Public Health, where he looked at where Black people settled after slavery, and then he compared that to where these polluting industries put their slaughterhouses.
Yeah, like you said, Elsie is the granddaughter of a freed slave and was born and raised on land that he had purchased. And, you know, I think her story really sort of epitomizes that of many other Black folks in the rural South and the Black Belt, as it's often called, in particular in Eastern North Carolina, where Black families, you know, had small farms. They sometimes had pigs, but they raised them out kind of on pasture or even, you know, in their backyards, basically, which was the case for Elsie and her family. And then as the pork industry began to consolidate and become more concentrated and more corporate, it just started really scooping up land in many of these Eastern North Carolina counties. And Elsie, you know, alleges, it's hard to find the paperwork to prove this, but she alleges that the industry actually stole her grandfather's land and built a farm on top of it. And that's a common, that was a common problem for Black families, Black farmers in the South, that their land was quite literally taken from them. So that was a big motivator for her. In the beginning, it wasn't necessarily only about, you know, the fact that the farm next door was then spraying animal waste on her mother's home, on her home, and polluting the air and water around her, but it was actually just a fight to get her family land back. And that was really what was driving her for a long time, this injustice of having her land stolen. And then on top of that, dealing with the pollution from the industry. And, you know, Elsie and others, many other Black residents began to start to speak out about this to try to get some support from their local officials. And again, they were just turned down. They were ignored. It really wasn't, unfortunately, until researchers from, you know, North Carolina's sort of prestigious universities like Duke University and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, when those researchers started doing an investigation of this issue, that it gave it some more legitimacy. I think it's a really sad fact that often having, you know, the kind of white voices step in and say, hey, this is wrong, only then did their issue kind of gain a little bit more leverage. But not to downplay the importance of that research, and you mentioned Dr. Steve Wynn, who's research approach was so community oriented. He went in and he deeply listened to the stories that he heard. He met with Elsie and many, many, many other residents. And he saw his research as a tool to be used to highlight their stories and their struggles and amplify all of that, rather than just, you know, coming into the community, doing a study and disappearing. He became a true partner to that community, and over years, you know, earned their trust and published many studies that documented the experiences that they had been having for decades. So his research showed that, yes, there is a disproportionate sort of impact on communities of color in Eastern North Carolina. There is a racial element to the positioning of these factory farms. And he and his other researchers, you know, basically said that's not a coincidence. There's a reason why polluting industries like CAFOs, like concentrated animal feeding operations or factory farms, are located in these communities. It's because they are communities with high levels of poverty. They have very low political power, ability to kind of fight back and have their voices heard. And, you know, the industry has taken advantage of that in a lot of ways. So his research was really transformative, and he and, you know, the community together, I think, really started to help this issue gain some momentum. And Elsie became a real spokesperson for this fight and really carried that through the entire rest of her life.
Naima, there's such a powerful scene in the Smell of Money documentary where we watch Dr. Wynn taking a slave map of North Carolina and then taking a map of the hog slaughterhouses, laying them on top of each other, And then it was almost a perfect match. And at that point, we hear you say this is environmental racism. Eastern North Carolina is the dumping ground for North Carolina. Can you talk more about that? And also, can you talk about what your reaction was when you were also involved in this work with the mapping?
Yes. Okay. So with the mapping, Steve and his students helped us to see what we were hearing from the community people and what we were seeing for ourselves in the landscape in Eastern North Carolina. By them mapping where things were located, it helped us to see, you know, that what we thought was a real environmental injustice and environmental racism, that it was in fact the truth, that we don't think it was a mistake that anything white people didn't want in their backyard, you can find it in Eastern North Carolina. Whether we're talking about the concentrated animal feeding operations or we're talking about landfills, coal ash, PFAS, you name it, and it is in Eastern North Carolina. The wood pellet industry has taken over Eastern North Carolina, and there's a lot of deforestation going on. And as a result, Eastern North Carolina is also the floodplains of North Carolina. And so for all this environmental degradation to be sitting in Eastern North Carolina, it's like double jeopardy on people. You are exposed on a daily basis. Then if you have a major hurricane and it topple everything over, then people are dealing with that contamination that's in the waterways as they try to navigate to safety. So that's an issue. So seeing that map really helped people to understand what was around them and, you know, at least be conscious of what's around you so that you can try to protect yourself in some kind of way. And then with the work that's going on as the organizer for North Carolina Environment Justice Network, it was my role to work with communities. If they called on us, I was the first point of contact. I would go meet with the community to hear what their issues and concerns were. And as I was in there listening, I'm thinking about the network. What resources do we have as a network that need to be brought in the room to that community? And so I would listen, bring the information back to the organization, and then we would talk about it, and we would determine what we had that could be taken to that community, and that's what we would do, whether it was research or just a connection with another community that was fighting an issue so that they could learn from that community and then, you know, be able to help themselves, or whether it was legal assistance they needed. We had lawyers that was doing pro bono work who would always represent communities that we work with in the legal arena that was needed. And so as a result, we began working on the CAFO issue back in the mid-80s. And that's been a continuous battle ever since. And it has grown over the years. It's been more and more people involved, more and more people becoming aware of the impacts of living near these operations. realizing that they no longer can trust their well water because they began to see the changes in their well water, where the water was getting murky and you could smell the contamination in the water. At one summer, I spent the summer with one of the students from the University of North Carolina doing well water testing. And I mean, you could literally smell the stuff in the water before you even got to the wells. And then you go inside, we would go inside people's homes and run the water inside, and the water coming out the faucet was smelling almost as bad as the water from the well. And so, you know, we were able to, as we did the testing, we were able to identify some of the chemicals that were there causing a problem, like E. coli, coliform, and high levels of nitrates. That was just three, but there's, as Steve put it, there's hundreds of chemicals in those waters that we weren't able to test for because we couldn't afford the cost of the testing and getting it analyzed in a lab. And so, you know, it's just been a continuous battle and fight and, you know, trying to help people to get some justice and get the state of North Carolina, not just the people in the community. We've dealt with the Department of Environmental Quality. We've dealt with our General Assembly, our Attorney General's Office, the Governor's Office. We've been talking to everybody about the issue. And, you know, the concern is why is nobody in this state willing to rein in this industry to make it do the right thing by the people that have to live around those animals? Because there are some things that can be done that could make life better for the people that's having to live around those animals. And that's talking about those lagoons you mentioned, the large number of lagoons that's out here. Where they handle the waste from those animals. And the lagoons are a major source of contamination for the communities because they're sitting out in the open air and they're filling up with all the animal waste, the feces and urine from the animals and anything else that's flushed through those slacks in the floor inside those buildings that go into the piping system that leads out to the lagoon. And it sits out there in the open air and you have hydrogen sulfide coming off of those lagoons that's really creating health problems for people. We've documented the fact that this exposure is causing elevated blood pressure. It's causing upper respiratory problems. We found high rates of asthma in children living within a 5-mile radius, with them having to be on more asthma medication, as well as missing, you know, time out of school, not being able to rest good at night because of the truck traffic from these animals as these trucks run back and forth through the communities to pick up dead animals, to take animals to the slaughterhouse, taking animals to the rendering plant, these sorts of things, picking up, you know, just running through the community, picking up the dead animals that's sitting by on the roadways in what's called a dead box. It's just all, it's a huge amount of problems. And as you all view the film, you will hear the community people that's actually living there talk about what they're experiencing. Yes.
We're going to take a quick break. That is Naima Mohammed, Senior Advisor with the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network, whose work is featured in the new documentary, The Smell of Money, which follows North Carolina residents and activists as they fight for the freedom to enjoy fresh air, clean water, and a life without the stench of manure. North Carolina is now home to 10 million pigs, and those pigs produce over 10 billion gallons of waste every year. It is sprayed on nearby residents on nearby fields. We're also joined by Jamie Berger, writer and producer of The Smell of Money. You can see the trailer at yourcallradio.org. And if you are in Northern California, you can see the film this Saturday at 5 p.m. at the Mindful Eating Film and Food Festival in San Rafael. And you can find the link at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are discussing The Smell of Money. It's a new documentary about activists and environmentalists in North Carolina who take on Smithfield, the world's largest pig slaughterhouse. We follow them as they fight for the freedom to enjoy fresh air, clean water, and a life without the stench of manure. The film calls on viewers to really think about what is on our plates. Who are the people behind what is on our plates? The film also calls on viewers to join the fight for justice. Jamie Berger is writer and producer of The Smell of Money. Naima Mohammed is senior advisor with the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network, who is featured in The Smell of Money. Jamie, how else can people see this film? You're going to different film festivals now that that is happening again, but will there ever be a time when people can watch it online?
That is the million-dollar question. I really hope so. We're doing everything we can, as you mentioned, to get our film into festivals, and we'll be playing at a couple more in the fall. So there's the one you mentioned coming up this weekend. We'll also be playing at the Sidewalk Film Festival in Alabama in late August, which I'm very excited about. But beyond that, submitting to a bunch of other fests, and hopefully we'll be playing throughout the United States. And then hopefully we will be able to strike a deal with a major distributor or streaming platform like Netflix or HBO. That's a work in progress. We're still, you know, doing our best to kind of gain some momentum through the festivals and make some connections there. But that is definitely our hope, that someday it will be much more broadly available for everyone to watch online.
All right. Well, we are all hoping that you end up on Netflix. That would be incredible. Before the break, Naima was just talking about what it's like to live with this on a regular basis. I mean, if you can imagine living just a block away from these slaughterhouses and then being sprayed with feces and urine right next to family homes in this part of Eastern North Carolina. There are two large pig slaughterhouses and then two chicken slaughterhouses. So they are dealing with this every single day. And then they're also dealing with the loud trucks that are transporting these animals, either, you know, to or from the slaughterhouse. It's just nonstop. So I just want to play a clip from the documentary, The Smell of Money. And again, this is the late activist Elsie Herring, who fought Smithfield. And Elsie, in the spring of last year, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which is a disease linked to air pollution. And in this clip, she just talks about what daily life is like living right next to these slaughterhouses. This is a clip from The Smell of Money.
You hear hoes making all kind of noise, you hear the trucks coming in, going out, picking up the pigs, taking them out. A beautiful sunny day, and all of a sudden you start to feel droplets coming down, and then you realize it stinks, you know? It's forced on us. Who wants to breathe in something that's unpleasant, that burns your nostrils, make your eyes water, and you start slobbering, and your nose start running, your eyes are running, you know? You're trying to cough. I mean, it is not a good experience. Ammonia, which is really very prevalent. Hydrogen sulfide is released too, and that's a deadly gas. And methane gas is released. I mean, there's gases that are being released, and we have to breathe this stuff in. So this is not good.
That is the late activist Elsie Herring in the new documentary, The Power of Money. Jamie, can you talk about what you learned about the smell of money? I was thinking about The Power of Smithfield. The documentary is called The Smell of Money. Can you talk about what you learned about the power of this company, Smithfield? Elsie said the industry owns everyone. You either work for them or a company they do business with. We should say that Smithfield declined to be interviewed for this film. So talk about what you learned about the power of the company and how they're so connected to many of the politicians in North Carolina.
Absolutely. It's really impossible to overstate just how powerful this industry is. As you mentioned, it's the world's largest pork company, and was purchased by a Chinese corporation a number of years ago. So it's hard to describe just the scale of this industry. You've probably seen Smithfield bacon in your local grocery store, but they go, you know, they have a number of other names through which they sell their products. So if you eat pork in the United States, you are almost certainly eating Smithfield pork. As far as their presence in North Carolina, their power is woven into every sort of social and economic and political structure of the state. They contribute massively to local officials' campaigns, so they have a lot of sway over over the, you know, outcomes of elections, I would say, in North Carolina. They really leverage their wealth and their power in a way that was just astounding to us over the course of our filming. And on a local level, that translates to a real feeling of intimidation. As Naima says in the film, the pork industry is kind of like the mafia in North Carolina. You don't want to cross them. Everyone, you know, knows someone who works in the industry. And there's a real, I think the industry has done, fortunately, you know, a really strong job of dividing the community in a way. They've kind of used farmers as sort of a scapegoat and drawn, you know, drawn tensions between pork farmers or, you know, pig farmers in the community and nearby residents, when really farmers themselves are actually also victims in this system in a lot of ways, because they enter into really restrictive contracts with Smithfield and are really under the company's thumb in terms of how they manage their farms, how they manage their waste on their farms. But I think the industry has really used them, you know, to kind of put forward this front of this, you know, sort of bucolic farm or the ideal family farmer. You know, they use that language a lot. And I think it distracts from the fact that, no, this is actually a massive multinational corporation that's generating extraordinary profits in this region of the state. And a lot of that money is not staying in Eastern North Carolina. You know, the industry talks about the jobs it creates, but actually jobs have been lost over the years as the industry has consolidated and has, you know, become kind of more corporatized and mechanized. You can have a farm with 8,000 animals on it and only have one or two employees on that farm. So, it, you know, they have these kind of myths that they spin about job creation, about economic, you know, prosperity, and all of that is just a front. It's you know, just a distraction from the fact that they really externalize all of their costs onto the community members, onto the animals, onto the environment, and, you know, the quality of life of the people in that area. That's who's really bearing the burden.
You mentioned the company and the brands. And so I'm at the Smithfield website. I mean, we're talking about bacon, sausage, ham, hot dogs, lunch meat, and a couple of the brands. There are a lot. I'll just mention a few. Farmer John, Armour, Farmland, Healthy Ones, John Morrell, Margarita. And so they own a number of these brands. And like you said, chances are if you're eating bacon or ham or hot dog, chances are it is coming from Smithfield. And it was very interesting to learn that because they own the entire process involved, the farmers do not know what they are feeding these animals because the pig feed is proprietary information. So Jamie, if the farmers don't know what they're feeding the pigs, that means that people do not know what they're eating. I mean, they're eating a hot dog, they're eating bacon, but they're also eating that feed.
Yeah, that's right. There's so much kind of secrecy in this industry. Not only do people not know what they're eating, but if, you know, your average person wanted to actually just visit a hog farm just to see where their food comes from, that would be nearly impossible. For us, you know, we had the fortunate luck to find one farmer who would actually allow us onto his property. And even, you know, even though his company had kind of told him that they'd prefer he not do that, he thinks it's the right thing to do to be able to show people where their food comes from and to have an open door policy. But that was really not the case with anyone else we met. The industry is really shrouded in secrecy, from, like you said, what goes into the feed to how they treat animals to, you know, how their industry is impacting people. And there's no way that, you know, they really can ignore that. I think it's so clearly demonstrated by the, you know, the residents who live there and the research that it is having a real impact, but that's not something that they, you know, they want consumers to know about.
And again, Smithfield refused to speak with this team for the documentary. You mentioned the farmer, and we were really struck by this farmer, Tom Butler. He is the only farmer, as you said, who would go on camera. He is a neutral witness in the lawsuit. We'll talk about the lawsuits in a minute. Tom Butler is in Lillington, North Carolina, in Harnett County. And in this clip, he is standing in a barn surrounded by pigs.
We have 10 barns, and we can put up to 800 pigs per barn. We're in hog heaven. These are pigs that we've just gotten in the last 3 or 4 days, and they came from a nursery. We'll keep them for 17 to 20 weeks, and we'll send them off to market. Said you can take any of these pigs and spend, say, 30 minutes with it. I'm just taking personal time, and tomorrow morning when you come in, that pig will come up and greet you, remember you, and be your friend from now on. They're very sociable animals and very smart. They always want to be where they aren't, somewhere else.
They always want to be where they aren't, somewhere else. Jamie, you got to give Tom credit for just being so honest, talking about how smart pigs are, how social they are. They want to be your friend after they meet you. I mean, you do not hear, people like Tom sharing this kind of information.
I know. He was such a gem. He was so deeply honest with us. We spent so many hours with him on his farm, and he was just, yeah, I think it's really interesting and telling that we made a film about factory farms, about industrial animal agriculture, and really the strongest kind of animal rights message actually came from a farmer. And, you know, I think he's had a real kind of awakening over the years, not only about the sentience and intelligence of the animals, but also just about the impact of his farm on the surrounding community. And he's poured hundreds of thousands of his own dollars into trying to make his farm more sustainable and to lessen the impacts. But I think in the end, he just recognizes, you know, and he's told us this, that this industry is, you know, causing much more harm than good for the world, for animals, for people. And he's now exploring getting into growing mushrooms instead. And we're really excited for him, that future step.
Naima, I was also struck by what Tom said about how Smithfield could have solved these problems 15 years ago because they had the technology, but they did nothing. He said if they would have added 10 cents to a pound of bacon and put it toward these issues, they would have solved the problem.
Yes, and that is a continuous concern that we're dealing with even now. The fact that in 1998, Smithfield entered what is called the Smithfield Agreement with the state of North Carolina. In that agreement, under that agreement, Smithfield had paid this researcher from North Carolina State University by the name of Mike Williams $17.2 million. And the state of North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken, added another $1 million for him to identify new technology to handle the waste from these animals instead of having that outdated lagoon and spray field system. And Mike Williams found 5 new technologies, and you can Google it. They are called superior technology. If you Google superior technology, you'll be able to see the 5 technologies and how they work. But he identified 5 new technologies, presented it to Smithfield, and Smithfield told the state of North Carolina it was not economically feasible for them to get this technology on the ground, and the state let them walk with that. And, you know, we've all, in the community, we try to figure out how can you afford to pay $17.2 million for information and then don't use it to the best of your ability. And so it's just mind-boggling to me, even to this day, that the state has not done anything to hold them accountable to that agreement. And as a result, people have been continuously being sprayed with the animal waste. When those lagoons fill up, then they irrigate the animal waste out on the crops around the community. It gets onto people's homes, onto their cars if they're outside. I mean, onto their cars and onto their homes and onto their bodies if they're outside. You heard Elsa talk about how you'll be outside and all of a sudden you feel this mist, like a rain mist, but only when they discovered, well, it's not rain, so what is this? And that's when they realized it was the animal waste coming from the grower next to them spraying the waste out on the crops. And then the wind get under it and carry it. And it, you know, and then the, as a matter of fact, I guess about a couple of years ago, the industry came out and told the state that the waste from these animals did not leave the property lines. And we was like, you know, I mean, that was just unreal. How do you state that it does not leave the property line and you spraying it in the air? The wind get under, the wind can take it wherever it wants it to go. And so as a result, we had some researchers from Johns Hopkins University. They came down to North Carolina and they conducted this study where they took those swabs like they're using for the COVID test. They took the swabs and they were swabbing the outsides of people's homes. And then they went inside and swabbed the interior walls. They swabbed countertops, refrigerator tops, microwaves, children's toys, tabletops. And they found animal waste on inside people's homes, on children's toys as well. And it was definitely pig waste because there were some researchers from University of North Carolina that looked at the DNA from this waste to see what it was, and it was identified as pig waste and nothing else. And so that refuted that. But the state, again, the state allowed Smithfield to enter this agreement and not follow through with it. And now they are trying to use this waste to create what they're calling it clean energy when they want to do now this biogas, which is going to be another source of contamination for communities living around these animals. Now they're going to have to deal with this truck traffic that's being going back and forth, getting that waste from the lagoons and taking it, transporting it to the plant to be used for create biogas. And that's going to, the contamination that people are already dealing with is going to be exacerbated as a result of that. So that's just going to be another source of contamination for communities to contend with.
Naima, we have just about 5 minutes left.
And lastly, I will say...
Naima, sorry to cut you off. We just have about 5 minutes left. And I just wanted to ask you about, you know, how you want people to respond to all of this. We just got an email from Diane who said, I wonder how many of your listeners would ever consider giving up their bacon. The day-to-day operations of these horrific CAFOs are hidden from the public for a reason. And going back to Tom Butler, the only hog farmer who would go on camera, who's thinking about getting in the mushroom business, he said the consumer could stop all of this. The consumer could shut down Smithfield next week. Just don't buy their products. But in the United States, the average American eats 18 pounds of bacon every single year. And I wonder if they know where it's coming from. So what message would you send to people who make food choices, you know, three times a day?
Well, yeah. Well, that is a message we've been working with and working on. And the only thing that I can say about that is, you know, a part of the problem is there's a lot of miseducation about who this industry is and what it does to the people living nearby. That a lot of people right here in the state of North Carolina are not even aware of the huge problems that suffer in eastern North Carolina as a result of the pork industry. And then the pork industry comes out and put up billboards and run TV ads talking about how good it is to be one of those contract growers. And they're talking about how they use this money to send their children to college and stuff, and how their children haven't been made sick. Well, you know, and so it's just a huge problem, and it's just a lot of education that needs to go on and help people to really understand where their food is coming from. But for those that know, you know, the thing would be to just not buy those products. And also Butterball, Smithfield brought out Butterball a few years ago. So they have the but the turkeys now that everybody uses for Thanksgiving. And so we've been saying to people, don't buy the Butterball turkeys anymore. Because that's a source of contamination and burden on the communities living with the pigs, because now they're living with turkeys and chickens because the poultry industry has been on a re-entry into the state of North Carolina in a massive way. And so you got double jeopardy there for the communities.
Wow. And also, in addition to the waste being sprayed on people and their homes, there are scenes in The Smell of Money with garbage bins near homes, and dead animals are piled high in these garbage bins. And so people also have to see that on a regular basis. I mean, it's just nonstop. Jamie, what are your thoughts on this? Smithfield is so connected to North Carolina politicians. And we haven't talked about the lawsuits, but I hope people can see the film, because there have been so many successful lawsuits filed against Smithfield. But what can people do about this?
I definitely think we all have agency in what we choose to eat. I know going fully vegan, as I have chosen to do through my work on this largely, is not necessarily an option for everyone, but everyone, I think, can to some extent reduce the amount of meat that they eat. You know, whether it's just leaving bacon off your plate in the for breakfast, or going, you know, a couple days a week without meat, or doing a meatless Monday or something like that. That definitely does help. As one of the, you know, as Tom Butler, the farmer in our film says, if people don't buy their products, then Smithfield goes out of business. And you know, I do want to mention that though this film focuses on Smithfield, the practices they use are common practices. And as Naima said, it's not just the pork industry, but the poultry industry. All industrial animal agriculture is extremely harmful to the environment and to animals, and to people. But I also think that there's a lot of room for all of us to get much more politically engaged in this problem as well. And, you know, for folks who don't live in North Carolina, I would encourage you to think about what is happening next door, what's happening down the road from you. Animal agriculture is all over the United States and surely is, you know, quite present in California. There are a lot of feedlots and dairy operations. So I would just, you know, encourage folks to see what's happening in their local area and to ask, you know, ask your elected officials, what are you doing about this? How are you caring for the people, you know, in this community, for your own constituents? And I think if more folks spoke up on behalf of their neighbors and you know, lended some power to these communities, that would go a long way. I think that's a big way to help. And also just spreading the word, you know, share our film once it comes out, hopefully, and is more accessible to everyone. And, you know, spread the word about this problem, because I think the more people know, the more, you know, we'll be able to fight it together.
Jamie Berger is writer and producer of The Smell of Money, a new documentary that follows North Carolina residents and activists as they fight for the freedom to enjoy fresh air, clean water, and a life without the stench of manure from pig, chicken, and turkey slaughterhouses. Naima Mohammed is senior advisor with the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network. Naima's incredible work is featured in the film The Smell of Money. Naima and Jamie, thank you so much for this great film, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you again for having us. Jamie. And thank you again for having us. And just one closing statement, I always say environmental injustice is everybody's problem. If you eat, flush your toilet, put out trash, or whatever you do, there's some environmental kickback from that for people living away from those areas.
Yes, thank you so much for that.
And the smell of money is going to be shown in Rocky Mount, North Carolina next Saturday, August 13th.
Great. Well, thank you again so much.
Thank you.
We will follow this, and we would love to have you back. We should also say another thing if you want to get involved. Senator Cory Booker is in this film, and he says that this is everyday violence that most people are not aware of. Senator Booker has introduced a bill called the Farm System Reform Act. It would crack down on monopolies. I mean, these companies are just getting bigger and bigger, and it would invest billions in the transition to a more resilient food system. It would also place a moratorium on large factory farm. So this is a big bill. It's the Farm System Reform Act, and you can find more information online. Thanks to BSOL for producing today's show. Thanks to David LaTulipe for engineering our show and grabbing the clips. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.